All right, thank you for that. I always tell people over the years, don't play a song that's better than the actual host of the show, because now I'm interrupting Tom Sawyer, but of course that is by Rush. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. And we come in with that song because there's a brand new, beautiful coffee table book called Rush at 50, packed with photos and a huge celebration of this beloved rock trio. And we bring in the man behind it, Daniel Bookspan. Daniel, welcome to the show. And tell us a little bit about the genesis behind this project, please.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for pronouncing my name right.
Sure. What do people say beside Bookspan?
What happens is they see that there's a letter Z in it, and they just start, like, stuttering. So I have to correct them usually.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, but the genesis behind the idea of my book was pretty simple. I mean, just I love this band. I have always loved this band. You know, I really was motivated by that. And I, you know, just the timing was right. And, you know, the 50-year anniversary was coming up. And, you know, my goals and the goals of my publisher aligned. And so we both wanted to do it. And we said, let's go for it.
So I've seen documentaries on these guys, and it's pretty amazing. And you go back to the Willowdale neighborhood in Toronto, and with Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, of course, with two different names. I guess the Russian name meant Lifeson. That's why he said it. But these guys go way back. I mean, we're talking like the 60s, right?
Oh, yeah. I think 7th grade, I think, is when they met up. 6th grade, 7th grade, something like that.
So when did the, it's funny because Neil Peart didn't come along for a while. And whenever I say Peart, people say, no, it's Parrot. No, it's Peart. There have been a lot of drummers over the years who said, I've gone up to him and say, you're my idol. And he's supposed to be very prickly. So two-part question, how do you say his name? And does he deserve the prickly rep?
I've always said Peart, and no one has given me any pushback on that. So I stick with Peart.
Okay.
But yeah, I know there are a lot of different ways people pronounce it. I don't know if he was prickly. I think he was just not an extroverted person. He was much more of an introvert, and I think he just, like, didn't really know how to deal with, you know, like, worship and adoration. In, you know, the Beyond the Lighted Stage documentary, I think the word he used for it is silly. You know, there's a lyric in the song Limelight, I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend. And I think if people think he was prickly, I think it was more, I don't want to say social ineptness, but it was more just that he was not a social guy. He kept to himself, he was a big reader, he just happened also to be the greatest drummer who ever lived. But, you know, in terms of doing the job of being a celebrity, I don't think that was for him. And any sort of, like, prickliness that anyone came up against, I think it was more about that than anything else, in my opinion.
So you mentioned the greatest drummer, and of course he really experimented with percussion and chimes. And I mean, his drum kit, I think, had about 70 different things outside of just, you know, a tom-tom and a snare and a bass, a couple of cymbals. But he also is one of the great lyricists, isn't he?
Yes. There is nobody before or since who ever wrote anything like that. Again, he was a big reader, like I said. And you can, you know, when you read the lyric sheet, you can tell this, you know, everything is written in a very specific way that no one else really does. But he totally commits to it. So it doesn't seem, you know, not like lyrics. He uses, you know, words and grammar and stuff like that that you don't hear in a lot of, you know, like, he doesn't use a lot of, like, you know, hey, baby, let's rock and roll, party, you know, like the kind of things that we're used to in most rock music. It's in this complete other direction. That's why, to me, like, when a lot of people say, like, you know, Rush should replace him and get a different drummer, I'm like, okay, who's going to write the lyrics? And you know, there's no answer to that. He was absolutely one of a kind, and you're just not going to find anybody, in my opinion, who's going to write like that.
The other thing, too, is it seems like for me, when, you know, I started high school in 79, and I want to say until I graduated college, like 10 years later, Rush had a new album every year. Am I, like, not that far off?
No, they had a new, in 75, they did two albums. But I mean, that was normal. And those, I mean, it sounds like I'm, like, probably around the same age as you. And I mean, the way I remember it, and, you know, certainly when you look back, it was normal for bands to, like, every year, album and tour, new year, album and tour, and that was just how it was done. You know, now you put out an album, and the band spends 5 years on the road, because that's where all the money is now, because, you know, artists don't make money off royalties anymore because of Spotify. But yeah, no, at the time, the album was like, that was the big deal. That was the thing. And, you know, you would go to the store, buy it, invite your friends over. It was this whole social thing. You know, we don't have that anymore. You know, and I'm not here to be like, you know, things were better in my day. But, you know, back then, at the time, it was all about, you know, album sales, radio play. That's it. And, you know, bands lived or died by that. And so they just got something out every year, and it was always distinct. It was always new. And, you know, it's coming up with something new every year. To me, that's the challenge, you know, because any band can just, like, put the same thing out every year with, you know, without really thinking about it. Doing something, you know, radically different from the last thing you did a year ago, that takes a lot of creativity. And personally, I don't know of a lot of artists who are up for that. Maybe the Beatles. The Beatles are the only ones I can think of that had, like, sort of comparable growth. But yet, back then, though, like, you know, putting out an album a year was, like, that's nothing. You know, they would worry if, you know, fans had to wait a year and a half and put out a live album, you know, just to tide them over for 6 months. So it's a different world now, for sure.
Got time for one more question. Would you, speaking of the Beatles, how much is John Rutsey like a Pete Best, or do you think they're not comparable?
I always thought, I think he's a good drummer. I don't know if you've ever heard the stuff that Pete Best played on, but he's pretty clunky, and, you know.
Oh, I don't mean like skill-wise. I just mean like he wasn't there for the fame.
No, like he was there at the very beginning, and, you know, due to, you know, artistic differences, you know, that that excuse, and, you know, he had diabetes also, so he couldn't tour. But he is much, I found him to be much more, like, beloved by the Rush fan base. That, you know, Beatles fans don't go around talking about Pete Best, except as the guy Ringo replaced. There's more love and recognition, I think, for John Rutsey.
Very good. And then, you know, you touring with Kiss, and you mentioned, like, you needed a DJ to start playing your songs, and they did. Yes. They got a break in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, they did. And, you know, it was an independent radio station, WMMS, where the program director could just, you know, get a record in the mail, go, oh, what's this, and put it on, and, you know, people would respond, you know, positively or negatively. In this case, it was very positive. But, you know, the DJ who did that, Donna Halper, who is in quite a few interviews in the book, she said, you know, by 1980 already, it was like there were getting to be less and less independent stations, and there was more corporate control, and now it's all satellite radio. It's all one playlist. So it's really, what, we really don't live in that time anymore. You know, and I think, like, for kids reading it today, it must sound like what life was like on Mars, or, you know, because it's so far removed from how they experience things now.
Well, especially there's no one before or after that sounds like Geddy Lee, seriously.
No, absolutely not. And there never will be. And, that's one, I will amend that statement. There are some Rush cover bands out there right now whose lead singers are women, and they sound like Geddy Lee.
Ah, that's cheating.
It is. It's totally cheating, but at the same time, it's like, well, hey.
You know what? I saw a Zeppelin cover band with a woman singing Robert Plant, and I thought, that's cheating, too. I mean, but hey, whatever works. Everyone should check out this book. It's called Rush at 50, Examining 50 Touchstones. Presents a unique look at Rush's career arc from a Toronto bar band to the international mega platinum stadium filler that they are. Every page is illustrated with stunning concert and candid offstage photography, including gig posters, 7-inch picture sleeves, ticket stubs, and more. It is an epic tribute done by our guest, Daniel Bookspan. Congratulations on this. It's really cool.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll go out to a little more Rush right here. Come on back on Sports Byline.
It's my own.